So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Love.
This week, we'll be diving into Neuralink and the latest news around that and brain-computer interfaces. Last week, the FDA reportedly didn't allow them to expand to human trials, so we've got Andrew Tarantola from Engadget to talk about that. We'll also be diving into a bunch of news around accessibility, the latest dumb things Elon Musk has said, and yeah, we've got some other news. We've got some Sonos speakers and a lot of stuff going on. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. Drop us a review on iTunes, and you can always leave us an email at podcastengadget.com. I'm sure after this episode, people are going to have a lot of emails to send us. You can also catch us Thursday mornings, typically around 10:30 a.m. Eastern, on our YouTube channel, where we'll be doing a live stream of the show, and sometimes we show off gadgets, and you know, we take some time to answer questions, so join us. It's a fun time. To reiterate, last week, the FDA reportedly said that it was not going to be allowing human trials for Neuralink, which is one of Elon Musk's other companies that we don't hear too much about often, but that's the one that's trying to develop a brain-computer interface, something that you implant in your brain that can communicate wirelessly with computers, that can also accept data and things like that. This is not a topic we've talked about very much, so that's why I've brought in Andrew Tarantola, a senior editor in Gadget. He's covered this particular topic. He also covers a lot of like forward-facing and futuristic topics for us in Gadget. So here's our chat. Andy's going to break down everything that's going on with Neuralink and BCIs in general and the issues facing Neuralink as a company. Andrew Tarantola, thank you so much for joining us on the Engadget podcast.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for talking to me.
Andy, I feel like your beat is some of the most fun stuff we cover because you're like far future, weird stuff, AI, you know. So you've been following brain-computer interfaces and Neuralink for a while. Can you give us a brief overview of what Neuralink is and what Elon Musk and crew are trying to accomplish with that?
Sure, absolutely. So Neuralink is a brain-computer interface technology company. They're developing brain-computer interfaces, which act as sort of analog-to-digital converters for your brain. They act like a gateway that allows information to flow between your analog brain and a digital computer. Same basic idea as what a microphone does for sound or what digital cameras do when they capture visual light. Back in 2016, Elon Musk and seven other engineers and scientists founded Neuralink, the company. Today, only two of those original eight people remain, Elon being one of them. Now, Elon reportedly got the idea for brain-computer interfaces from the neural lace concept, originally laid out in Ian Banks's The Culture series.
Yeah,
you know the book series. It's great. That's not entirely accurate because we've actually been shoving computers into living animals since the 70s. I'm serious. The very first human BCI implantations happened in the 90s, and those were like super early. But the ones that we see as BCIs today, those initial ones started happening in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing like, you know, video and footage of people just wearing, basically head caps that was transferring, you know, electrical data too with tons of wires. Are those basically like early BCIs?
They were the originals, but they're still in use for a lot of applications today. There are actually two main types of brain-computer interfaces. You have the EEG skull caps, like what you're describing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those work great because they're non-invasive. You don't need to like drill a hole in someone's skull to use them. The downside of that is that they don't produce as clear of a fidelity. The signal strength isn't as great because you're trying to read that through all of the brain and bone and muscle and tissue and stuff. But again, they don't require an additional hole in your head.
That makes sense. I feel it's the difference between having like a telescope on Earth, right, and having one in space, right? Like the sort of clarity you get from that.
Yeah. Exactly. And on the other end of that, you have stuff that's implantable, like what Neuralink's doing, that requires doctors to drill a tiny hole in your head, about 2 millimeters in size, and then they expand it out to 8 millimeters to get everything in there and close it back up.
Gotcha. Anyway, just a tiny hole.
Tiny hole in your head.
And I feel like that is my first pause with this technology. You know, So, Andy, the reason we're talking about this is because Neuralink has been in the news recently. You know, you just said that, yeah, they started with, what, like 7 people, including Elon Musk, mm-hmm. a bunch of people. Most of those folks have gone, people from the actual like neuroscientists and people who are actually working in this field. That doesn't seem very promising. And most recently, we saw the report that they've been denied human trials, something that was linked to a ton of pig deaths, apparently. I know you reported on that. What is the story there?
Okay, so there has been a whole lot of pig killing. Before we start human trials, or before you can start human trials, the FDA requires you to go through a number of animal models to make sure that it's safe and isn't going to immediately like explode people's brains. So Neuralink has been doing that, and it just hasn't been going well for them. An advocacy group last year claimed that the company has killed more than 1,500 animals, including 280 sheep, pigs, and monkeys since 2018. Reportedly, 15 of the 23 simians that Elon Musk showed off playing Pong with their minds last November, reportedly, a number of those have died as well, according to claims from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're an advocacy group that is not particularly happy with what Neuralink's been doing. And additionally, the FDA has had some serious concerns about Neuralink's technologies, which is why last year they denied the company's request to begin human trials. The FDA's concerns involve stuff like, what happens when the battery fails? Is that going to discharge electricity or amount of heat into your brain?
Can you describe this device, by the way? Because like you're talking about a battery. You know, batteries have not been so kind to us lately. Batteries in our phones are expanding. Batteries in electric cars are exploding.
Yeah.
Now we want to put them by our brains?
Okay. Oh, God. I just try and imagine getting onto a plane with that.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Neuralink Link, which is what the device itself is called, is a little about 23 millimeter hockey puck shaped thing that sits inside your skull with up to, I think, 3,000 little teeny tiny electrodes spreading out from it into your motor cortex, where they'll pick up electrical signals from the surrounding brain tissue and feed it into the device, which then translates it into a digital signal and bounces that out to a nearby mobile device using Bluetooth.
Gotcha.
So it's basically, it sits on top of your brain and translates the signals from your gray matter into something that your computer can understand. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to do that in the opposite direction as well, being able to take signals from a computer back into the brain, allowing people to get a sense of feedback or tactile sensation from the robotic devices.
This all sounds, listen, I'm like all for new gadgets and not trying to like cross the border between man and machine, although the AI stuff recently is also getting me worried. But it does seem like this is a lot of work and a lot of dangerous work. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the reports about monkeys a couple years ago too. Like people were saying, they're basically torturing these monkeys to get these things in there and to like test like how they're working. I'm reminded of the beginning of 28 Days Later, where that didn't work out so well for humanity, right?
No, with not at all.
The rage virus. But why are we putting all these animals through this, right? Like what would we be able to do with a Neuralink, ideally?
I mean, in an ideal world, the possibilities are endless. I mean, with the stuff that we've already got today, I mean, BCIs can help restore paralyzed people's ability to walk. There was a 27-year-old guy in Southern California who was paralyzed in a 2008 traffic accident, and he was given a brain-computer interface and a little device that basically bridged the gap in his spinal column that had been severed during the accident. And he was trained on a BCI to basically move a little computer character across the screen by walking using the same mental pathways that he would use to tell his own legs to walk. And then they programmed a computer based off of that and then fed those signals when he does them again into the device, allowing him to walk.
That does seem pretty wild, Andy. Like it seems usable, but mainly for, you know, somebody who is disabled and may want to, you know, regain use of some parts of their body. Is this, what is the thing for, you know, somebody who maybe doesn't have to go to such drastic measures, right? Like for a person, like the reason why you would get an iPhone or something, like would we, is the idea of a Neuralink to be ever that casual too for people?
Oh, absolutely. Just not within the next, you know, 5, 10, probably 20 years. I mean, we're still dealing with a very new fight technology that's barely barely out of the lab. For as much as Elon Musk likes to talk a big game, we're still very much years away from seeing this in more than like extreme medical cases in terms of like, I mean, yeah, it'll help a paralyzed person walk. It'll help you control robotic limbs and exoskeletons and Luke arms and help people with Parkinson's and ALS. But it's not going to be a Fitbit for your skull like Musk is trying to tell us, at least not in the near term.
Are people actually taking Neuralink seriously? Because I've seen a lot of commentary from other people in the BCI community who are like, this is, it's kind of a joke, and everything he's showing is stuff we've seen before. Like, is there any real innovation here, and are people in the industry taking him seriously?
I mean, so yeah, it's hard to take Elon Musk seriously just because of his history of outrageous statements. And as I said before, like, we've seen this sort of technology since the 70s, since the 90s, since the start of the century. Whether Neuralink themselves will be able to do all this, I don't know. I mean, you've already got companies like Synchron, which last year successfully implanted the first BCI over at Mount Sinai Hospital. They basically beat Neuralink to market. So the technology's there. Someone's going to do it. Whether or not it's Elon Musk and his specific team of people, who knows?
Is that one that was just implanted, is that one wireless in the way that Neuralink is wireless? Can communicate wirelessly with a device or a computer?
Synchron is actually really cool because instead of having to drill a hole into your skull, they use a stenthode. It's a stent like what they use to open up arteries, the clogged arteries, and an electrode. So they basically jam this up through your jugular vein into your motor cortex, you know, as you do.
Uh-huh.
And they expand it out there, and from the walls of the from their arterial walls, it can pick up the electrical signals coming in from the brain. So again, you don't need that. You don't need to install like 3,000 little tiny electrodes throughout your gray matter. You don't need another hole in your head. You just need this. It's stuck up in there, and that it picks up those signals, shuns them down to a computer embedded into your chest, and then it goes out through Bluetooth, and you can control stuff.
Gotcha. So you just need to offer up your jugular to like a vampire. Basically, like that's kind of the imagery here. I think Musk was talking about that at some point too, from stuff I've read. I just want to go back to like why the heck did Elon Musk do this to begin with? Like, I seem to remember he was terrified of, you know, unchecked AI and the power of AI to destroy humanity, basically. Mm-hmm. And hey, I'm scared of AI for other reasons, like mainly for disinformation and what it's going to do for our social structure. But, you know, what is the idea for Neuralink basically to make us feature complete or feature competitive with AI, like as fast in terms of processing data and things like that?
I mean, this is wholly my own opinion, but
no, sure.
Elon Musk saw a shiny and decided he wanted to do that. It was the same thing that he did with OpenAI when he dropped off the board because he was going to make a robot at Tesla. And then as soon as OpenAI dropped ChatGPT, all of a sudden he's back saying he wants to make a new AI company that does an anti-woke version of it. It's just...
He's a guy who I think is very into geeky things, but has way too much money that he can just like act on all of these impulses, right?
Yeah, there's no one telling him no or focusing him on it.
Gotcha. I'm wondering, like, what are... So, yeah, we've been exploring this field for a while. I'm sure the animal rights people are really annoyed at like how they're testing these things, but are ethicists and philosophers thinking about like what it means for humans to be integrating ourselves into machines like this, and especially like at the level of the brain? It seems like that opens up entirely new questions of like, okay, who gets access to this? You know, how will they all of a sudden, have a higher place in society? Are we asking the bigger questions? Because I feel like around AI, especially, like we're just kind of barreling into things, and that's what's annoying to me.
Absolutely, we're moving fast and breaking stuff. We've been asking these questions. I mean, you look at movies like Johnny Mnemonic I'm only coming up with Johnny Mnemonic because I watched that this weekend. But yeah.
Have you seen the black and white one?
The black and white one. I didn't know there was a black one.
Black and white like cut of it, which looks kind of amazing. I want to rewatch.
Ooh, like how they did Logan Noir?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we've been asking these questions for decades now. And we will continue to ask them. And ethicists are definitely wondering how this is going to impact society, how this is going to impact our relationships with technology and with each other. Whether or not the companies that are also developing this technology are asking those same questions, or whether they're asking if they even should be doing this sort of stuff, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
But this is definitely stuff that we're going to have to work on and figure out and ask. You know, these are tough questions we're going to have to ask. But as you mentioned, you look at like AI. Have we ever developed a chatbot that hasn't turned immediately racist?
Yeah.
That's not a rhetorical question. I've generally been trying to look into it, and I can't find one. Mm-hmm. So
because like humans will find a way to troll the inputs, right?
Of course.
Make that happen. And we saw that immediately with like the last thing with Tay that Microsoft introduced, and people can easily like the whole thing about ChatGPT, right? It's pulling data that's existing on the internet. If people learn to manipulate like the source files and stuff that it's pulling data from, yeah, we're kind of doomed there. You know, around this stuff, Andy, I am wondering, what are your thoughts on this? Like if Neuralink was, you know, feature complete, totally ready, totally safe, would you be ready to like plug yourself into this? Would you see benefits of that?
Oh, absolutely. I have wanted to live in a Ghost in the Shell future since I was about 11. Mm-hmm. And like the idea of being able to control my car, my computer, my phone, the world around me using just mental commands. Oh, hell yeah. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. It's very, I imagine like the game Watch Dogs too, where you're basically like just waving your hand and changing stoplights and
exactly.
forcing other cars off the road. Yeah.
I want a Cyberpunk 77 future. I mean, that's what I'm looking for.
And I think about those futures and those are all like dystopians. Yeah. Dystopias, right? It's like,
At this point, I think we're getting scared. Yeah, we're getting dystopian anyway. Like no matter what we do at this point, it's going to be dystopian. So if we can choose one that lets me open my garage without having to find my garage door opener, sign me up.
Totally. I feel like the thing is, we're seeing like the more and more we connect to our technology, the like less we can predict the human impacts of it. So like social networking has caused a serious damage to the world and to the idea of democracy. Our smartphones have like taken up all our attention. It just feels like every time we like basically bring humanity closer to tech, there are severe downsides. Kind of worried what they're going to be here.
Yeah.
How is the competition looking? You mentioned, was it Synchron? Are there any other direct Neuralink competitors?
There are a handful right now that are like commercial companies, but they're not nearly as far along as either Synchron or Neuralink are. You're also seeing a lot of university and academic researchers still in this field, because as I said, it's still very new and it's still barely out of the lab. So you don't have as many commercial interests pursuing this just yet, because there aren't quite as many commercial applications. It's still very much in the research and development phase.
That makes sense. I do feel like the academic researchers would be the ones who are like, okay, let's take this slow. Let's ask questions and like, let's be considerate about this. Whereas once it gets to a company or any capitalist driven organization, then the idea is like, okay, how do we productize this? Right. Which is kind of what happened to ChatGPT. And now it's going to be everywhere. I'm looking at my Windows 11 taskbar now, which has a little search bar, which is not fully ChatGPT like together, but it is. That's Microsoft's vision, right? They want it in everything. It seems like we just want to like really move forward as much as we can because it gets the headlines, I guess.
Of course.
And yeah, I don't know where it's going to go for Neuralink. Like, do you have any, what is next for Neuralink, Andy? Because it seems like the human trials are not happening anytime soon. Do they have to prove themselves to be more responsible or considerate for those to happen?
Yes. The FDA has a special, sort of side plan for these sorts of developments. If the animal testing doesn't go well, they'll have Neuralink do a smaller, slower test on humans, basically a smaller sample size spread out over a longer period of time. So Neuralink can still get FDA approval for its device. It's just going to take a bit longer than what they were initially hoping to see.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, Andrew Tarantella, thank you so much for joining us in the Engadget podcast. Where can we find your work on the internet these days?
Oh, you can find me at Engadget.com.
And you're still on Twitter, right? Any Mastodon or anything?
I'm on Mastodon at Tarantella at masto.ai, masto.ai.
All right. Thank you so much, Andy.
Thanks, Dev.
let's move on to some other news, which I think is kind of relevant to a lot of topics we're going to be talking about today. It's a big week for accessibility news. A lot of companies have talked about stuff. And of course, somehow we are once again talking about Elon Musk and this very, very strange interaction that happened earlier this week, where I saw a former Twitter employee, Haraldur Torlifsen, who started a tweet thread saying very, very respectfully, very kindly, saying like, hey, haven't been able to log into my email for a while. What's going on? He pinged Elon directly. And there was this weird back and forth where Elon was like, tell me what work you did. And then Haraldur, a.k.a. Hari, listed all his credentials. And there was this weird thing that happened where essentially, like, this guy, Hari, was trying to figure out if he was actually still employed by Twitter or actually fired. He had contacted HR. He contacted several other people. And it wasn't until, like, he pinged Elon on Twitter to kind of figure out what's happening that he actually got some sort of confirmation. And that kind of spun out of control because then Elon was sort of like started trolling the guy, saying, you're not actually that you didn't actually do much work. He kind of laughed at him early on, too. And then it was like revealed that this is a guy who had sold a company to Twitter, a design firm to Twitter. He's also somebody who has muscular dystrophy. So he's been using a wheelchair for a very long time. And it's just a very strange thing where Elon was pretending or at least assuming that he did not actually do much work because Holly is also having issues with his hands and finger inputs. So this is a very strange story. I don't know if you saw this part of it, Sherlyn, and then I'll talk about like where we are or your response to this if you saw this going on.
Yeah, I saw this. I went to look at the back and forth and to see what Elon said to this person in particular. And it was basically, he assumed, he was like, oh, this person, he basically questioned the legitimacy of this person's claim that they're disabled, more or less, and said that, like, oh, he's prominent.
He's prominent. He has an active Twitter account and is wealthy. The reason he confronted me in public was to get a big payout. So that was Elon's response initially.
But then there was the other part of it where he basically said this person claimed that they can only type for a certain number of hours a day. And so therefore Elon assumed that this person can't do any work because they can't type for longer than a couple hours a day. But Harry, I think, came back and was like, yeah, I get so much done in the 2 hours of typing. It's not because my job is requiring me to sit at a desk and type nonstop for 2 hours straight. 2 hours when spread out throughout the day is like, could be 200 emails. Like, it's a lot.
There are also different input mechanisms. When I was in college, I once like helped somebody who had basically worked so hard over a weekend. She like just couldn't use her wrists for several months. Like, they had to heal. So I set up, this was in 2005. I set up text-to-speech software so she could actually get work done and do some writing.
Yeah.
So we have the tools. We have a lot of ways to do things.
And I'm sure that they're doing that too. So it was that was to me the most triggering part to see, because for Elon to completely dismiss that person's value as an individual just because he believed that they claimed a disability that he didn't seem to think existed, that was not cool. And also just the fact that Elon felt the need to
troll him.
Exactly. Like, come after this person as a knee-jerk reaction. He did a so-called apologize afterwards.
So there was stuff that happened there. Yeah. Then there were the revelations that, I don't know if it's technically true that Holly was on a do not fire this man list, because the terms of his employment are kind of weird. So Twitter had bought his company several years ago. Instead of getting a big cash payout, he decided to take a salary, basically, as part of this whole thing. If he was ever fired, then Twitter would have to pay him the full amount of that deal. Also, just as an aside, Holly is somebody who's become sort of like an internet hero in kind of a sweet way, because he is one of the most well-known people in Iceland. He has done a lot of work. He has this project where he's trying to build as many wheelchair ramps in Iceland as possible.
That,
That's super cool. Something close to my heart. He's also opening up a bar/restaurant/cinema in Reykjavik. Just go to his Twitter account too. Like, it is a beautiful space. But clearly, like, a guy who seems like he's kind of doing things in the best way possible for the people around him, right? So by taking that salary, he was going to be taxed higher than if he had taken the full lump sum of that deal. There were ways like for him to pay less taxes. And he purposely said that he wanted to pay back into the country that you know, gave him basically a free education and a lot of help throughout his career. That's very nice. That's something Elon doesn't quite do with his taxes. So yeah, this guy has been become a bit of a hero. He's been on several podcasts right now. I just wanted to point this situation out because it is like another example of like Elon's like knee-jerk style of management, which turns out like, oh no, you are in a world of hurt. And so after all that, I think after a lot of these things came to know, and maybe lawyers started calling Elon Musk, he issued an apology saying, I would like to apologize to Holly for my misunderstanding of his situation. It was based on some things I was told that were untrue, or in some cases true, but not meaningful. Okay, yeah. He's considering remaining at Twitter, Elon says. I don't think Holly has replied, like has said, like if he will be doing that. I think there's... Honestly, like everyone, I wonder if there's going to be like a big public move to be like, this man should just run Twitter, because clearly I don't know if it's in good hands right now. Yeah,
I am just very curious, given everything that's been happening, right, with the outage, this mockery, this awful behavior that his most fervent supporters, or even his more casual supporters, like how do they feel now?
Just people on Twitter, I see, like basically taking Elon's side. I'm looking at our chat room right now and seeing a lot of people saying that too. It's like...
I didn't see that.
There's folks. It is a weird thing. Please don't simp for billionaires. They don't care about you. Care about the guy who was basically laid off from a job that he was apparently really enjoying too and was doing good work at. But the basic humanity of not knowing if you were working or not, especially if you are supporting your family and, you know, trying to do a good job, I think is just... It's a really sad story, and I think this is going to be like one of those things when we look back at what Elon's reign of terror at Twitter has been, like this is going to be a pretty notable story.
I like that Darren N in our chat was like, it's horrible, but at least he apologized and somehow had the self-control to not call him a pedo. Or yeah, so that's funny.
He apologized, but even then, like
his apology was empty.
It was a weird mealy-mouth thing where he says, I was told things that were untrue, or in some cases true. But not meaningful. Okay.
It's kind of like, I'm sorry that I got bad info. You know, like, I'm sorry that someone else gave me, you know what I mean? Like, almost throwing someone else under
the bus. I'm sorry that I reacted to you the way my personality really tends to.
Let's put it this way. A real apology would have looked like this. A real apology would be like, I'm sorry, I messed up. I should never have said this sort of stuff to anyone ever. I will be trying my best to be a better person in the future. That's it.
I'm looking forward to seeing a real apology like that from Elon Musk ever for anything. For anything.
Just FYI, in case y'all are wondering what a real apology looks like, that's what it looks like. You know what I mean? Like, some people don't understand. The word sorry doesn't always mean like I'm apologetic. It just means I need to say sorry because the people are asking for it, but I want to deflect still, and they can add stuff. I'm sorry, but it's not necessarily an apology. So
I think one key aspect of this too is the way Elon basically like diminished Holly's disability and sort of like pretended it wasn't real. And that is something people are dealing with all the time too. Like people with chronic syndromes where it's not really visible that they're having issues or need certain types of help. There's often an issue of managers and people at the work just thinking, oh, you're just being lazy or you're not actually doing your work. And that is just really crummy. And I hope like this brings to light a lot of these situations. But let's move on to like some of the actual news, actual good news too. Microsoft held a disability or an ability summit this week, and they announced that Microsoft 365 will soon have an accessibility assistant. That seems pretty cool. I know you've been following this stuff closely, Sherlyn. Do you have any thoughts on this and what Microsoft is doing as a company right now?
Yeah, I mean, this is the 13th Ability Summit that Microsoft has hosted now, and the accessibility assistant coming to Microsoft 365, which confused me because I was like, isn't it Office 365? Anyway, Microsoft 365, it's basically kind of like a checker, which will offer you suggestions on how to like, hey, this part, you know, small font like that may be hard to read, or use more high contrast color schemes to, allow for better readability, that sort of stuff. So it will be throughout the Microsoft 365 suite. And Microsoft has done this before in, you know, things like Visual Studio, which is Visual is more like a program thing, right? So you're like making programs to make them easier to use. But alongside the assistant, the accessibility assistant, the company also announced more 3D printed attachments for the Surface Pen, which were already available before for the Business Pen and the Classroom Pen too. So it's just like coming to more things. And this is part of their whole you know, using 3D printing to make accessories a bit more usable by people with different motor disabilities or so. Azure is also getting some accessibility-minded updates. The Seeing AI app we saw fairly recently got, like, you know, update to help people with low vision or who are blind make their way through it. It will do
an even better job of helping you, like, walk through a building, which is
exactly
kind of cool. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, navigate a structure and that sort of thing. So a bunch of updates. And again, Microsoft has a great chief accessibility officer, has a pretty good approach to accessibility within its organization and its structure. Like, it, you know, it's got, like, people embedded in every team as opposed to, like, one team that may or may not get included in the whole process, right? So I do applaud Microsoft for constantly kind of being on top of it. And yeah, I think we could stand to see more of it. I think this week or last week we had Hearing Day, World Hearing Day. So maybe this is tied to that event. But yeah, I like to see more being done. I think the work is never done for making sure products are accessible and inclusive. So
for sure. It's Microsoft has, like, a whole like department, right, devoted to accessibility too, which is something we've not seen at many other companies. So they've been doing better, I would say. I know people have followed basically what Microsoft started doing.
Right. Well, here's the good news is that, like, they play nice with each other too. I mean, Apple has a very good approach to accessibility as well. I'm not as familiar with how their accessibility department necessarily looks, but I know that I've spoken with Jenny Leigh Fleury. She's the chief accessibility officer at Microsoft, and they have, like, a spoken wheel approach. So there is sort of that internal department, but they more have, like, people spread out to all the teams, hardware, office, Azure, etc., who are involved in all the product design stuff. So a bit more of an integrated function, as opposed to, like, say at Google, maybe there's a separate accessibility team, or at Twitter, where they used to have a very young and newly set up accessibility team that was, like, a separate team from everyone else. It's a bit of a different approach, I think.
We also know, or at least you were getting ready for Google I.O. So do you have anything to tell us about that?
A little bit of behind the scenes. I've been pushing Google to, like, let me know what the date of Google I.O. is this year for a long time. I've been like, guys, I have travel plans coming up. I need to know if I can leave in May.
This is, like, very smart of you, Sherlyn. This is better than when I took 2 weeks off and Microsoft was like, oh, yeah, I have a big event in the middle of the week.
No, but look, it just shows my priorities are, like, I'm a slave to work, right? So I'm like, y'all, I might not go to this important wedding if you have I.O., so just let me know. You know what I mean?
You
so
would,
like,
probably, knowing you, you would have more fun at I.O. than some, is, maybe a wedding.
Well, so now I get to do both. Yeah. Now I get to do both. Basically, I will be going to a wedding in May, and then straight after that, go to Google I.O., which is happening May 10th. Okay. It's at the Shoreline Amphitheater. It is a limited in-person event. But some members of our team have gotten invites, including mine. I am quite likely to go. We don't know who else is going yet. No real clue on what we're expecting to see in terms of products. I would not be surprised. I actually would bet big money on AI being a focal point of this year's Google I.O. I wonder what the odds are on that one. But anyone here want to take me up on my bet? I bet we will hear more about Bard AI come Google I.O. 2023 in May, on May 10th. I bet a special shout out on the show. I'm sure that's worth a lot of money.
Oh, man. So speaking of AI, it also seems like Microsoft is holding a Future of Work event on March 16th, which is going to focus on AI and how they're going to be using AI in the work. So, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's going to be integrating AI into more of the office products and that sort of stuff. But it sounds like we're going to learn a little bit more about Bing AI as well, coming to some of these products. Having ChatGPT write your essays for you right inside Word, right? Like,
yeah, well, there was a report from The Information that said Outlook could use AI to improve search results and suggest email replies, which, you know, Gmail has, like, basic versions of that already, and Word could give you writing suggestions. So, you know, I don't know. I really wonder how word processors are going to balance the sort of, like, here are some suggestions for what you're writing versus just let me write the whole thing. Like, just open Word and just be like, I gotta write a review about this phone. Just write it for me.
I know. Or, I just, like, can you write a review for me that I just, like, edit a few bits and pieces of here and there? Like,
No, don't do that, because then you are training it to make us irrelevant, Sherlyn. So no, we always have to have the human element.
Other stuff. I write jokes.
No. If we do this, it's just taking from us. So anyway, Future of Work, March 16th event from Microsoft. That's going to be, I would expect not too much like Engadget related news, but we'll be keeping an eye on it for sure. Have you seen these new Sonos speakers, Shalyn?
I have heard about them, been hearing about them for a while. I like Sonos, very good audio brand.
I like Sonos too. And this week Sonos announced their spatial audio speakers. This is something that was leaked, I think, by The Verge several weeks ago. And we've been expecting it for a long time. So they have announced the $450 Era 300 speaker and also the Era 100, which is $250. The Era 300 basically looks like it's going to be a HomePod like competitor. It is a big single speaker. Looks like it has it's almost like it's like a very weird shape. It's kind of like you took a speaker and you kind of squeezed it in the middle, so kind of you have two speakers coming out at either end. The idea with spatial audio, as with the HomePod and the Amazon Echo Studio, is that it actually has several speakers inside and can sort of like give you a sense of you're watching a live musical performance rather than hearing one or two speakers individually. So it is cool technology, I think. Yeah. So Nate Ingram at Engadget has written up his perspective on it. He took a demo with them, and they seem nice. They seem really cool. My thing is the Era 100 may actually be more interesting, especially for people who have Sonos surround sound setups already. I believe both of these are Dolby Atmos capable. I didn't get a look at that.
Yeah, with if you have, you can pair them up, apparently, and then if you have a soundbar, you get like a complete Dolby Atmos like setup, apparently.
That's what it seems like. But yeah, the idea of using a pair of Era 300s, which that may be a little extravagant. That's $450 per speaker. Yeah. But using them as your rear speakers, if you have a Sonos Arc playbar, like the Sonos Arc soundbar up front itself, that's like a $800 thing. Plus the sub, which is another big chunk of change. You could have a beautiful wireless fully Atmos system in your house that covers Atmos from the front and Atmos from the rear. And you know what? That stuff is kind of wild. I don't know if you've probably heard in theaters, Shalyn, because Atmos is everywhere. Have you heard like Atmos in somebody's house? Maybe at Sam's house?
No, Sam ain't fancy like that. sorry, Sam. My brother in Singapore somehow, I think, managed to get some secondhand Sonos speakers, maybe, and I have experienced some of that. I think I can't tell if it was necessarily Dolby Atmos.
It has to be the
Arc.
It has to be the Arc or the Beam 2. The Beam 2, which I reviewed, also has has a bit of Atmos.
Could
stuff,
be the Beam 2. I can't remember.
Anyway, these are
I do have a question. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, my question, Dev, is like, you know, my setup is Google speakers around my apartment, which is now a one bedroom. So I have some space. And I've been thinking, should I invest in Sonos? Is it worthwhile to go to Sonos?
I would say so. I mean, the question is, do you want it to be like a little standalone speaker, or do you want it to be like buy your TV and give you TV sound? Like, do you want it to be your TV speaker too? And then at that point, you should decide, like, okay, maybe the Sonos Beam 2, I think, would be a good one for you because it's a nice little soundbar. But you can also use it as just like your living room speaker, you know, whenever you want to hear music. So that would be my recommendation to you.
Can I link the Sonos to Google speakers? I know this is like my personal shopping advice channel, y'all. Welcome to my channel.
I believe Sonos does support, they support both Alexa and Google Assistant, as I recall.
And so I can have both the Google speakers and the Sonos speaker play at the same time?
That I don't know about. That is up
okay,
to Google.
I'll talk to Google. It's okay.
That is up
anyway
to Google. And also the way Google like handles partner devices is weird.
I'll just make it a request. They'll be like, yes, we'll
do it for you. Anyway. New Sonos speakers, very exciting. I'm a big Sonos fan, even though I also wrote an article several years about when Sonos initially announced that they're going to be basically ending support for some of their first-gen devices. And that is the danger of Sonos. That is the danger of like getting any smart device, where the risk is that in a couple of years, like support could end, or you know, they could just decide to deprecate your device and you're stuck. And that's not something you have to deal with if you buy big boy speakers, if you buy like standard hi-fi speakers or something.
Right,
so,
right.
You know what? The more we talk about this stuff, Shalyn, I have a pair of like Kef giant bookshelves around my monitor right now, which plug into a little amplifier. These things will last forever. No,
oh, okay.
No. These things will last forever, though. And they also require a lot of wires, which I'm not sure you'd want to do. But man, good, like it is weird how we have the old analog tech, because speakers are using analog wires basically typically, can last forever. You know, they're not they don't suffer the whims of smart devices or software updates. Makes me think more about those things and why we may need more of those in general. Okay. So did you see the Spotify news?
I think I cringed.
Spotify is debuting a TikTok style music discovery feed. We did talk about this rumor and they officially announced it this week. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, they're going to start rolling out in the home section of their mobile app with a more visual and dynamic look, according to Billy Steele. The company says the visual feeds are built for deeper discovery and more meaningful connections between artists and fans. I don't know. How do you feel about the vertical feed? Have your thoughts changed?
No, thanks. Next. Thank you, next.
Thank you, next. You don't want to just open up your Sonos and have it blaring music at you? That doesn't
sound
like a good
user
experience.
Spotify, this is my behavior when I open Spotify. I go into Spotify, I'm like, what am I in the mood for? I go and I look for, I have like 7 playlists depending on my mood, right? So I have super upbeat today or like really chill low vibes and Sherlyn low vibes. When I go discovering songs, I'm like, I want this song but replicated by different artists or something. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And I don't know if that's what they're going to do with this TikTok style thing, but I'm not looking for a visual experience. I'm looking for audio.
Sonos can't help but give you a visual experience because you look at Spotify? Most of the time, most of the time when you're playing a song, it shows you like a little clip of a video or something,
right?
Like always on
and
repeat.
And it's getting, and I think that that's what this is built off of, right? So like it's getting a bit weirder and weirder too with what the artists decide to provide with the little clips there too. Like for this song that I really like called BB Vengeance, they've changed the visual that accompanies it for a bit. And it's at first was this like one girl that's dancing the dance to BB Vengeance. And I was very confused because it was not BB. And I was like, wait, what is this her in like really laid back clothes? And then they changed it to like several other people dancing this. So basically there's like some kind of dance challenge going on. And then it's I don't know what the point is, right? And then I also saw another one where it's a Taylor Swift song, and Taylor Swift just has a loop of her like making a face at the camera or something as her album art thing. And I'm like,
it's
so
weird.
I feel so close to you, I guess.
Spotify wants to chase the way we are hooked on social networks, right? They want to chase the way you swipe on TikTok or Instagram and be like, oh yeah, you just want to keep swiping music, right? That's how you listen to music? I don't think so.
Spotify's most viral and most successful social media style product is Spotify Wrapped. And that's all they got to do. I mean, I think that they've done very well with that, but they're still trying to chase others. They should figure out a way to make Wrapped more like year round, I guess. I don't know, some other,
or weekly or something. Give me like a weekly update. But you know what, music discovery is hard. Like how do you find new music, Sherlyn? Like do you actually seek out new stuff, or do you like go on recommendations from people?
I do seek out new stuff. I have to use a mix of ways. I follow like subreddits that do new music recommendations. I do like my own, like I have to go through like copious like music libraries on Spotify and like press it, play the thing, right? And then like skip to the chorus and like, do I like this chorus? And then like add it to my playlist or not, or watch YouTube compilations of new songs 2023, that sort of shit. But
I think
it's hard.
YouTube does end up weirdly, YouTube ends up being like the thing that I kind of turn to when I just want background music, to be honest. Like one of my favorite channels, and I've talked about this before, is called My Analog Journal. And it is just people spinning records. That's all it is. It's like, it's DJs typically, but also people who have really good taste. And they're just like, for an hour, I'm going to spin you know, salsa classics from the 70s. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I don't have to do any work. I don't have to like think about this or set up a playlist or hit radio for this one thing. Mm-hmm.
I have very specific vibes I need for like different times of day or different days in general, different moods, right? So like I don't like just randomizing it and letting someone decide for me. Maybe I'm a control freak. I am. For those of you who are listening to us as your background noise right now, hey, rock on. Thanks for putting our voice in your background. What's up?
Does Spotify give you like vibes yet? Can you just like pick stuff? Like I have this vibe. I want to have stuff because
they organize.
Spotify
feels
really confusing to me.
I know they do curate. They have like the further down you scroll, they have like feeling myself energy or like more of your crushes or bedroom jams, which none of them are ever really fitting for me. I don't feel like they get me in terms of what I'm looking for. So.
It's weird. I do like the algorithmic playlist. So it's like, give me a radio playlist. Like, give me a playlist based on this one song, which you've talked about, or this one artist. Yeah. And that is always useful. As part of this update, by the way, Spotify is updating that kind of specific feature. It was called Spotify Enhanced before, and now it's called Smart Shuffle. It'll add suggestions to playlists that perfectly match the vibe, quote unquote.
Nope.
It also mixes up the order. You can activate it by double tapping on the shuffle icon. Here's the thing, like I want good music. I don't want to do the work of always choosing it, and I want it to be smart enough to like get me stuff I like, you know. So that is the push and pull that Spotify is dealing with. You know what, folks, let us know what you think. Do you want a TikTok style feed in Spotify? Once this thing debuts, do you like it? Let us know, and drop us an email at podcastandgadget.com. Moving on to a couple of fun stories. It turns out this is the week several companies have decided to launch very bright, colorful devices. So you have something special in your hands, right, Sherlyn? Or nearby?
I do. I actually forgot to bring it with me to the live stream. But the yellow iPhone 14, I have it. You can head on over to the Engadget Instagram or YouTube to check out the unboxing video I did. But yeah, we have a yellow iPhone 14. It's a, you can call it the banana colored yellow, like banana yellow. I call it the banana phone, basically. It's Pikachu yellow. It's Pikachu yellow, not pea yellow, but it's also, depending on how healthy you are, it might be pea yellow. Okay. Cool. Thanks for letting us know your, banana yellow. It's, what other types of yellows is? Let us know.
It's a yellow phone. I just want to know why. Why?
I like that.
It is March. It is early March. We are 6 months away from the actual new iPhones. Why do we need a new color
or
now?
An SE? Well, or an but SE. They've done this before, right? The last year, this time, we saw the green iPhone 13s. We saw army green regular iPhone 13. We saw frosted green iPhone 13 Pro. I don't know really what the logic is to like
more sales. Yeah. Like people will be like, okay, well, I see this color and I've been thinking of getting an iPhone, so I will make the jump.
Right. If you were thinking of it and you thought that like you were holding out on a color to make your decision, because I don't see anyone that just bought an iPhone 14 in, let's say, blue or purple, which they both have as well, suddenly looking at the yellow going, no, I need to swap this out now for a yellow. Like, I don't see it unless you have oodles of money, like just, so much money.
This is not a thing to swap to. It is a thing to upgrade to from an older iPhone, maybe. Yeah.
Right.
And also, this is not going to be on the Pros. This is just the iPhone 14 and iPhone 14 Plus.
And Plus, exactly. So pre-orders are starting this Friday, which is tomorrow. And then it will be actually retail available on Tuesday. So again, if you want to see what this looks like in videos that are not made by Apple, you can go onto Engadget's Instagram.
You know what? I feel like I would like a bolder shade of yellow, like almost like a marigold. Nokia, like several years ago when they were doing the PureView phones, it had like a really nice bold yellow that really stood out.
This is pretty close.
This is kind of light. This feels a little like it's very like gentle.
It's more yellow, Pikachu, you know? Than like Raichu, I guess. I don't know.
Raichu. Okay, talk about bold colors. Microsoft also debuted a Velocity Green Xbox controller. Oh, yeah. I have nothing to say except, like, it took you this long to make a very all-green Xbox Series S and X controller? This is your brand. Green is your brand.
But also, would you call this Razer green? You know what I mean? Like, this is kind of close.
Is it?
It's not the same green. It's a little grassier than Razer's green.
Razer's a little
green.
More neon.
Limey. Yeah, more lime and acid, but this is but it reminds me of like gamer vibes in the same way that Razer does.
Gamer vibes, sure, okay, whatever. It looks nice, and I like the Xbox controller. Yeah,
if you're listening, Microsoft, I like it.
You like it? Send it to Sherlyn to play her not like your game.
My
that non-existent. Don't actually exist. Yeah,
I'll buy Xbox Game Pass. Okay, like I just needed a controller anyway.
Okay, Sherlyn, imagine this. What about a horned beetle? A nice, like, spiny horned beetle with many, many legs. How do you feel about that next to your ear?
F off.
Because that's what Nothing wants you to think about with their new ear.
I want nothing
earbuds.
To do with it. I want nothing to
Why
do
would you
this.
Do this, Nothing?
It's so weird. When I saw this picture, I was like, we have to talk about this on the podcast. Nothing, that brand that we have spoken of on this podcast several times before, that made the transparent earbuds cases and the phone with the transparent back. They're back with a strange new teaser picture. Remember the last time they made like a product announcement, they used parrots, I think, in their images.
Yeah.
Like, okay, birds, fine. This time around, if you haven't seen the image that was used before, go over to Engadget.com. Nothing's image is basically this like 16x9 picture, right? Horizontal landscape picture, whatever. With the first two thirds on the left basically empty, and the one third on the right is this. What, a dung beetle? A scarab beetle? Whatever it is.
It could be a dung beetle, but it looks like it's a spiny beetle that has like three very pointy tops and
lots of legs. Just legs with, yeah. And then like a very, like it's black and it doesn't look slimy kind of. But,
I think it's looking at me.
Yeah. It looks like it's, oh yeah, exactly. I'm losing my mind here. Why is it staring at me?
Why would this be the image you tie to a thing that you stuff into your ears?
Oh, the product isn't even that prominently featured because, like, remember, the last third of this picture is mostly
going to have
a beetle pushing away the headphones. So you push, you get a glimpse of a transparent case with, like, what seems to be the top of an earbud.
I feel like you need to do some investigative reporting here. You need to call up Carl Pei and be like, what the hell are you thinking? Do you want people to associate these things with their ears? Things going into their ears? Are these things going to... I don't know how far this marketing campaign will go.
I mean, look, I get it because it's been quite interesting to see the marketing images they've used for all of this. But look, I think there was some reasoning that they gave for this. It was like... Honestly, I felt like they gave a sort of explanation, but now that I'm reading our article more closely, I'm realizing that no,
they didn't really give an explanation. If it is, what does a dung beetle look like?
No, you're right. You're right. It's just like yeah,
it's
ears
a horned beetle because dung beetles are like rounder. But either way, not the great product association you want out there, Carl Pei.
They're going to launch on March 22nd, so I guess we'll find out more then.
In the U.S., though? Like, is this something we can buy?
Probably not. We don't know. We really don't know. We'll find out more.
Well, that was a great waste of time. Thank you, Nothing. Thank you, Carl Pei, as usual. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I wrote up a piece about another piece about the PlayStation VR 2. I spent a bunch of time in Gran Turismo 7 and Resident Evil Village in virtual reality. And you know what? It's pretty wild. Like, I think the PSVR 2 is really excellent hardware, as I discussed. I think it is way expensive, and I think it's a hard sell for a lot of people. But if you do end up getting one of these things, my God, are these games great. Like, actually sitting in the driver's seat in Gran Turismo 7 and looking around the car and using the mirrors realistically, it just feels really good. It feels like, oh, man, this is kind of the stuff we've been working towards for VR in general. And Resident Evil Village is freaking terrifying. Just
yes!
Terrifying in VR because it's like any horror game in VR is rough. But especially that game, which has really creepy imagery and like, you know, the very tall vampire lady that everybody got obsessed with. She is very tall in VR. And VR really gives you a good sense of scale to be squashed by vampire lady. So anyway, enough about that. I think these games are really good, and we're seeing like more and more high-level games take advantage of VR with modes like these. So that's a cool thing. Maybe VR should just be like a mode in many games rather than have separate VR games. I just don't know. It requires so much development time. It takes so much money to make those games. It seems like a tough sell for developers because VR is such an expensive thing already. So maybe when we're all wearing AR glasses or something and you can like be thrown into a sort of virtual world based on a game, that would be kind of cool, but we're not quite there yet. What are you working on, Trillin?
I'm still testing the Halo Rise. That's a little delayed because this week there's just more editing than usual. So I, you know, you'll see that coming still. We're planning a very fun video on that. We're waiting on Amazon to help us out with something. But it should be a lot of fun. Stick around for that. And then South by Southwest kicks off today. We're not actually covering it in person or whatever, but I expect some news out of it. There is sure to be some fun.
They're
VR
not doing
things.
Remote viewings for movies and stuff either, right? So that's somehow.
If individual companies, exactly, like individual companies will reach out to us, and that
or
sort
movies.
Of thing. So maybe
like the actual culture part of South by, we haven't really heard anything from folks. So
yeah, I have like a VR thing I'm working on. That's I can't say because it's still. Okay. Under wraps, but that might be going up on the site this week or next, so we'll see. But yeah, a bunch of things that we're working on in the background. Around Engadget, there's the rest of our team has been hard at work. And Dan Cooper actually tested a very interesting product that I think has caught a lot of attention this week. Remarkable, the people that made that e-ink tablet that you can write on, have launched a Typefolio for the e-ink or the e-paper tablet. And it's called, well, according to Dan, it's a very pretty, very good looking thing, but a little expensive. I mean, like, it's very confusing to me. Like, you went e-ink and you went pen, right? But then now you're also like, yeah, let's type on
it. I kind of want to type on it. It's the thing. Like, if I bought one of these things, I'd be like, okay, for sure. I do like scribbling with my pen, but you know what? If I'm stuck somewhere and I have a device that I can just type words on, it's not connected to Twitter. I can't go to YouTube and waste time. I just got to look at this black and white screen and write words. That's kind of cool. That's pretty compelling.
I know. I see the appeal. It kind of like has like typewriter vibes, except for it's not a typewriter. I see the appeal. It does seem expensive though, so I'm like not entirely sure. But if you want, you know, the details on all of that, go over to Engadget.com for Dan Cooper's.
Let's talk about the pricing. So like the Remarkable 2 is $299. You have to buy the stylus separately. It's $79 or $129. And the keyboard folio is $199. And I do believe the last time I looked at the Remarkable, you also have to pay a subscription to actually
for
use
the software.
Like, yeah.
That syncs your notes. Yeah, it's really just for the syncing of your notes across devices.
If you have this thing, you'd want to use that. So anyway, I keep looking at the Remarkable being like, you're such a beautiful piece of hardware. You do not make sense. You do not make sense in my life at all. But man, is it cool for some people? If one of you is crazy enough to buy this thing, let us know. Podcastengadget.com. Let's move on to our pop culture picks. What's up, Sherlyn?
This week, I am blanking on one. One second.
Well done.
I almost got it. Wait.
See, this is why I write mine down, and Sherlyn does not.
I send them to. I send them to.
All right, let me go, you think about yours. Okay. For me, I just want to shout out Creed 3, the third film in the Creed franchise. And I don't know, what is this, the ninth Rocky film, technically, Rocky universe? This is Michael B. Jordan's first movie that he has directed. It is incredible, and I think it's really good. So I just want to say that. If you enjoyed Creed 1 and the sort of like dynamics of the fights, I think this movie, like, it brings in Jonathan Majors, who was also recently in Ant-Man Quantumania, and he is beautiful man, a beautiful boxer, as a sort of like childhood friend who has been sort of betrayed by Adonis Creed, at least as a kid. Like he was in jail for a while because of a crime that they were both there for as younger folks, and he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. This movie is incredible. And I will say this mainly because this movie is anime, and my God, it is wild to see. Like, Michael B. Jordan has talked a lot about his love of anime. Like, he is a straight-up weeb. Go look at Polygon. Like, they've talked with him about this stuff. Like, he is referencing Naruto. He is referencing, like, specific episodes and, like, character arcs. And the sort of dynamics of people who used to be very good friends who become, like, kind of mortal enemies, very anime. The actual way they shoot the fight scenes, too, is very, like, dynamic. The camera is always moving. There's, like, great parallax motion at times where, like, the camera is circling around somebody while the background is moving in a different direction. There are freeze frame shots of you just took a frame of Naruto or Dragon Ball Z, honestly, and put it on screen and made people around America watch it in theaters. And I'm like, I gotta applaud it. It looks amazing. So I really dug this movie. I feel like it could have been longer. Like, there's a lot going on in it that could be explored a bit more. But man, if you have a chance, go see Creed 3 in theaters. It is anime. Confirmed. What's up, Sherlyn?
I like the marketing around this movie has been interesting, too, because I don't know if I got targeted advertising or whatever, but one of the ads was like, oh, tell your boyfriend this is a movie about boxing. I was just like, more like tell your girlfriend there's hot, sweaty men in this. Like, right? Like,
what is that too?
Yeah, it was a really weird ad. I was just like, it feels weird. I didn't like it. And then also I saw the Michael B. Jordan interview with his like former high school bully or something on the red carpet.
Oh man, I love that. Like, he was the person who sort of used to make fun of him because he was a child actor.
You called me corny. You called me corny.
He was somebody, he brought headshots into school. Like, he was somebody who was hustling to be an actor when he was a kid, and this person would make fun of him. Now she is interviewing him on the red carpet. He's just
trying to get him to talk to her. Yeah,
He's just like, oh, remember when you called me corny?
No,
like,
she even brought it up. She was like, remember we went to the same high school?
No, we went to the same high school. And he was like, yeah, I remember.
You called me corny.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, you said I was a corny kid.
Oh, man. That's a truly epic moment. Look up this clip of him just being, he could have like made it much worse for her too. So
yeah. But oh, he stayed through the interview and he talked through it, like be a bit, he was, you know, on the professional end of things, which was good. Anyway, speaking of funny, my recommendation is actually, and I'm sure you'll approve of this one, Atsuko Okatsuka's comedy special on HBO. It's called The Intruder. Atsuko Okatsuka is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She is a, I think, first generation Japanese American person, and this special was directed by Take Notaro, and she just nails a lot of the humor. I also like when humor can be funny but inoffensive, and she relates a lot of her personal experiences, which I, as someone that's an immigrant, identify with a lot. Like, okay, you probably have seen this joke float around Instagram, so this is not a spoiler. One of her jokes is basically, she goes like, oh, my grandma is gluten-free now, like, or is gluten intolerant now, and she goes, did you know that our community can get this? I was like, yes, Asian people, we don't have food intolerance. I was like, what's going on? She was like, she starts laughing. She goes, I thought only white people had this.
We're like, oh, this was a made up thing. I mean,
yeah, it was okay. Quite funny.
Totally get it. Have you seen the Chris Rock special, which was the other big comedy special?
I did. I was gonna mention it alongside. So I have seen the Chris Rock. What did you think?
I want to see Atsuko's because I think Chris Rock's is like, oh man, you're just a dinosaur.
A bit more offensive.
You know, yeah, not even just offensive, just like, man, I could tell why your marriage didn't work out, huh? I could tell, like, you just have a lot of issues around women, and you should be telling some of this to your therapist and not to us as an audience. So it's very 90s.
Yeah.
Like, very 90s.
It's also
in a lot of ways.
It's also a very nice change because Atsuko's comedy special focused on, her husband features prominently in her stories, but they're like you can see they have a healthy like relationship where they're both very secure and well adjusted.
They like
and
each
you know
other.
What's cool? They yeah. like each other. You know what's cool? At the end of the special, she brings out her grandmother and her husband onto the stage, and they wave and they say hi and everything too. I actually haven't seen that in a stand up yet. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's beautiful.
So it's wholesome, and I like that. We all need a little bit of wholesome.
Is good. I love good comedy. Thank you for sharing that, Sherlyn. And I think
yeah,
we can wrap.
Check it out. Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and at Devendra at mastodon.social on the Elephant site.
If you have any other reference colors for reference things for what the yellow iPhone looks like, you can send them to me on Twitter. I am at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Send us your favorite hex codes.